Okay, so here's the question. You go to the shuk, and you see that there's two options before you. On the one end, you can buy these fruits, these delicious apples, delicious peaches, whatever, and they're heter mechira. And you've heard that this heter mechira thing's shady, and you don't really know what the deal is, but you've heard. And on the other end, you can get the yevul nachri, it's called, which is bought from non-Jews. So which option is the preferable option? So you're going to hear a surprising answer, opposite the controversy. So, but in my particular opinion, I actually think it's better to buy from the Rabbanut heter mechira fruits. But in order to understand why I believe that, we have to explain what's going on here. So first of all, why do the laws of Shemitah even apply if Shemitah is going to be over once Rosh Hashanah comes? Because the laws only apply once the fruit comes to be chanata, which means comes to be formed. So vegetables are formed right away. So they start in the beginning and basically end at the end, with some exceptions. Whereas fruits come later in the year, they only come into their form, and therefore the rules of Shemitah continue until the middle of the year. If you want an exact listing, I printed it out, of like what fruits, but you'll see some of them are into mid-March, right? Pesach 2016, so a lot of this stuff. Etrogs and figs and grapes and all this stuff. So you really have to know this stuff.
Wait, does this actually give dates for this?
Yes, it gives you specific dates. I mean, I'll probably hang it up somewhere. But Baruch Atah Adonai, Hinu Melech Olam Shekol Yamim. Hi. So you really got to know this stuff. Okay. So now, what's the Heter Mechira all about? Let me give you a little history. Originally, when the Jewish people came to the land of Israel in the first Aliyah, it was mostly from Jews. We're talking about in the late 1800s, 1880s. And people had this problem, which is that now they're back in the land of Israel, and the Shemitah was coming. And biblically, you can't work on the law of Shemitah, and the year of the Shemitah, right? But if they stopped working on that seventh year, they would die, because they were starving in the first place. So all the more so to take a year off of agriculture would have meant death for a lot of them, and if not death, then it seemed like the whole community would have just like fallen in, so to speak. Yeah. So
I'm not here for your teaching. I'm just here to have a table. No, I'm joking.
So mitoch shelo lishma bo lishma. So they needed a solution. So there were rabbis at that time that said we can do something called the heter mechira. And basically, it's based on the premise that Shemitah nowadays is rabbinical. It's not biblical. If it was biblical, there's nothing to do. No way to get out of it. But since it's rabbinical, and it's a case of pikuach nefesh, so they said we could do heter mechira. Now, what is a heter mechira? We'll get into all the lach of details soon.
What's pikuach nefesh?
Pikuach nefesh means your life is in
this. Why is it?
Because they literally, if they didn't plant for a year, then they wouldn't have had enough food to survive. So it really, literally was a case of pikuach nefesh in many cases. So for that reason, there were many rabbis. Rabbi Maliver was the first person to suggest it, but there were, I don't know if it was the first person to suggest it. There already, this idea was out there in tshuvas way before this, but this is the first time where the heter mechira was applied to a whole community of people. Yeah?
Can you take us back to the psukim and tell us a little bit like what it says, what the philosophy and like the reasons behind it is, because
okay,
like we jump right into it.
You're right, I know. It's just I'm trying to cover so much ground. So it could be we'll just have to do a couple of shears. This won't be a one type shear, but since Nimrod requested it, yes. So the Torah tells us there's this law called of Shemitah. There's actually four different sources in the Torah, and each time it stresses a different angle. Sometimes it's more, it seems like it's for between us and God, Shabbat LaHashem. Other times it's more of a communal thing, or you should rest, your children, the ger, the almanah. It's a communal thing so that everyone should kind of have a year of rest. So every time it seems to parallel Shabbos, so there's definitely a linkage between Shabbos and Shemitah, even in the words chosen are very, very similar. But what's clear, and this is the most important point, is that Shemitah is not about the individual. Shemitah is not about me. Shemitah is about the community of Israel and deepening our sense of faith or connecting to the community, but it's not about me, the individual. Okay, Nimrod, that's a very important point. Because if it was just about me, then I'd just say, well, do whatever's most convenient for me, or maybe what's more religious for me. But if it's about the community of Israel, so I always have to be asking myself, what's best for the community, and not necessarily what's best for me. Yeah?
I feel like we have much less community to, like...
That's true. What's one of the differences between...
Like, even Shmita's, like you said, rabbinical, like, what do we... Like, there's very few things are... Now I'm thinking about it, that's really...
Communal. That's what Rav Kook would criticize as the biggest problem with Chutz La'aretz Judaism. That we're so focused on the individual, you know, even our individual spiritual growth, and we forgot about the concept of the klal.
I'm saying, but even in Israel, what is it?
And you're right, and it could be that we took some of that Chutz La'aretz Judaism back to Israel. Right. And that's why, one of the reasons why Rav Kook is one of the main proponents of the Heter Mechir, because he's saying it's not just about me, the individual, it's about the community.
When was Rav Kook...
alive? So we'll get to the history. Hold on. So
still
that's a very, very brief overview of Shemitah. If you were to ask me, it's about, on the basic level, Shemitah is supposed to be about belief in God, that God provides your sustenance, right? That does. So it would seem like it would be the more frum thing to do to refrain from planting at all, and right? But at the same time, we have to take what's best for the community into account, and not just the individual. So now getting back to history. So like I said, in the 1880s, there was that first Aliyah, which was mostly from Jews. Now there were, let's say, Haredi poskim who supported this Heter Mechira, and there were also religious Zionist poskim who were against the Heter Mechira. It wasn't necessarily divided in party lines in that first Aliyah. And the basic premise of the Heter Mechira was the following. One, almost all rabbis agree, as we'll see, that Heter Mechira is rabbinical nowadays. Okay? Two, this is considered a pikuach nefesh. Okay? And three, we can sell the land to non-Jews, and that somehow takes away the sanctity of the Shemitah fruit. Okay? Those are three big assumptions. Because the situation was so dire, so many of the rabbis... in the end of the day, basically said, yes, we're going to allow this Heter Mechira thing. Okay? Because of such tough situation that during that first Aliyah in the 1880s, many rabbis allowed the land to be sold to Arabs, and they did work the land in that seventh year. Okay? Then comes the second Aliyah. Okay? The second Aliyah, because of what was happening in Europe, was mostly secular. It was mostly not religious. Okay? So now, you have tons of Jews coming, and they weren't all from Yidden. And now it's kind of like the party lines are already divided. And you basically had the religious Zionist rabbis who said that if we don't allow this Heter Mechira, now we have so many more people to feed and so many more people in the land of Israel. And if we don't allow this Heter Mechira, then no one's going to want to move to Israel. Aliyah is going to be killed. And so a lot of the religious Zionist rabbis led by Rav Kook.
Okay, so he was like in the early 1900s.
Early 1900s.
He's way older.
No, he's not. He actually was born in Europe in World War I. He died right before World War II. So
his son was older, though.
Yeah.
There's a Tzvi Yehuda Kook.
Yeah.
And I'm saying I thought he was like...
like the 1400s.
No, he's...
Yeah.
No,
Rambam.
No, he's relatively recent. So in that second Aliyah, already historically, you see that the religious Zionist rabbis kind of go on the Heter Mechira side and start supporting Heter Mechira. And you have the Haredi rabbis who pretty much all line up against Heter Mechira and try to find every reason in the book why it's bad. Okay, so that's just a little bit of history.
What do you mean, try to find every reason?
Meaning, if there's any halachic reason that can be found against the Heter Mechira, they're against it.
Why?
Because they were basically at war with the secular people who were making Aliyah. And the secular people were saying, well, we're going to work the land anyway. And they felt themselves kind of at war with these secular atheists who were founding the land, you know.
Yeah.
And the religious Zionists were saying, well, if we don't support these workers and find a heter for them, then all of Israel is going to collapse and we're not going to have any agriculture. And so they took the opposite stance. So we need to find any reason to support this as possible. Now, it's interesting because Rav Kook himself was very, very hesitant. He wrote a whole book about Shemitah, Shabbat Art. He's very, very hesitant to be lenient about on this issue. He really didn't want to. And in fact, he himself says, like, well, even if you're relying on heter mechira, it's better to like still be strict and take all the chumrot of the fruits and apply it to even heter mechira foods. And he himself is not a natural nekel, but Rav Kluk himself, I think I have the quote here somewhere. Here, it's right at the end, the third page. Rav Kluk says the following. If we are overly machmir in this matter beyond what is required, the enormity of the Chilul Hashem and the destruction of the Torah it would cause would be inconceivable, for it would reinforce the heretics who claim that the Torah does not enable the Jewish people to survive in its land, and therefore we must renounce its commandments. Yeah, so what's he saying here?
He's saying that it's if we're so strict about all these rules, it's going to be harder for the Jewish people to live in this land, therefore we're going to have to struggle to live here.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
It's going to show that, not to other outsiders that we shouldn't live here, if it's, you know, if we have to abide by all these rules, that we can't live here.
Right. If we only look at things as a technical way of looking, doing things, then we're going to miss the broader picture, which is that Hashem wants the Jewish people to be back in the land of Israel. Which is obviously Rav Kook's perspective, not every rabbi at that time necessarily agreed with him. And you can understand why this is not just a halachic debate, this is also an ideological war going on here. Yeah? Nick here?
Isn't it like saying in essence that like, oh, the Torah doesn't like really work, so we have to like be more lenient?
It's a good question. You're right. Certainly someone could take that approach and say, listen, either you have a moon in the Torah or not. The Torah says Shemitah, do Shemitah, have a moon in Hashem, and that's it, right? I certainly could imagine. That would even be my natural understanding when I first learned about Shemitah.
But it's all intermittical, so you can't really...
The fear is that would happen. That is the situation that happened.
That people aren't going to be mekabel the Torah in the same way. Yes, you're right. And you should know, that's why Rav Kook wanted to fight that there's still... we shouldn't totally forget about the fact that it's a Shemitah year. And that's why Rav Kook said we should strive to be machmir to find better solutions, better than this heter mechira, which we will talk about. But to just answer your question, Yakir, at the end of the day, Rav Kook is recognizing that we are living in rabbinical Judaism. We live in a rabbinical world. And this is a rabbinical law. And thus, rabbinical Judaism means that we have to use our rabbinical tools necessary, that Hashem wants us to use the rabbinical tools necessary and apply that to the modern situation. Yeah. We have to take the ethos... Sure, of course it is. That's why it's controversial. Yeah. That's we have to take the ethos of the Torah and understand what Shemitah is really about and try to apply that to our lives. But at the same time, we have to be practical people and know that if the Jewish people are not going to make aliyah, not going to be able to function in the Jewish land, if we're overly stringent, then we as the rabbis, not as every individual, but we as rabbis have to find a way to let the Jewish people to live and prosper. Understand? Should know there, Rav Rimon, who I'm basing this stuff on.
Oh, I know.
Great book. Yeah, Shemitah, if you guys want a really, really in-depth understanding of this. So Rav Rimon suggests a great idea that during the Shemitah year, we should take the idea of Shemitah, which is that ideally everyone should stop working and just connect to Torah more and connect to each other. And everyone, you could do yoga more, but everyone should make more time in their life to learning Torah, and we should even make more time for giving, like a gemach. If you're a doctor, 10% of your time should be dedicated towards free doctoring, 10% free lawyering, 10% free rabbiing. Just so the idea of Shemitah should still be alive in the world. Yeah? Okay.
Question. Is it also possible, like, to counter Rav Kook? Obviously, like, I don't want to do that. But is it possible that, like, part of us, like, having to struggle to be in the land is, like, Hashem wants us, you know, he didn't just give us a land for nothing. Like, we have to struggle to be here, to show him that we still want to be here. Is it possible that, like, he enforced these rules so that, you know, it's a challenge for us to be here?
Yeah. Okay, for sure. There's certainly the idea of Yisurim, of afflictions, and you have to work. Eretz Yisrael is only acquired through afflictions. So certainly one could argue, no, you need to work hard, and you need to have Mesiris Nefesh, and not work your fields, and we have to rely upon God.
Because, like, you know, like, there's no Mashiach, we're not in the times of, you know...
Sure.
We're not in great times, it's just so we have to struggle to live in the land. You know?
Well, Rav Kook would disagree with you about that. Rav Kook would say we are in the first steps of Mashiach. We're in the Atchalta de Geula. Yeah. But... But I would say the following. It could be as an individual, Rav Kook would encourage you, and the religious Zionist rabbis would encourage you as much as possible, maybe not to rely upon all these leniencies and to struggle and to go out of your way to work a little harder in the seventh year. But the question is, what about those people who aren't going to be following these laws? Are we going to just let them, the majority of the Jewish people, be sinners and be okay with that? Or are we going to kind of do this heter mechira, which is allowing 90% of these farmers who otherwise would just be totally blatantly violating the law, to give them some sort of out, being as there is an out, so that they're not sinning anymore? Okay, this is a general difference of opinion, perhaps, in the religious Zionist world versus the Dati Lumi perspective. Yeah, questions?
But so back then it was because today, how could you say that?
Okay, very good. Very good question. We'll get to that. Okay, any other questions?
I think something Rav Kook was also very big on was like, first he chose us as his people and then he gave the Torah. So like the Am Yisrael is like,
it's like
actually the first,
right?
Am Yisrael is the first priority, and then like Torah is also a huge priority. Of course,
so
you can't say no to Torah.
I don't like
what?
So you violate the Torah for Am Yisrael?
No, but like if there's no other option for Am Yisrael.
What are you saying, that there's another option?
No, right, I'm not talking about this question, but I'm talking about like then, like
Defend what Nimrod's trying to say. Or Nimrod's not saying you should violate Torah for sure, but when the Posek is taking into perspective different options, when it comes to this option and maybe the more frum, so to speak, that has more sources behind it option, so Rav Kook is suggesting, but there's another source, which is Am Yisrael, which is also very important in that factor. No one is, no rabbi as far as I know, an Orthodox rabbi, is saying we should go with the sinning option. But when there are different options in the halachic realm, so the Am Yisrael is very important to the equation. So, you know, this is also a big debate when it comes to the rabbanut versus badatz foods, right? So, for example, rabbanut will rely upon a lot of leniencies that the badatz will not rely upon. We'll give a whole nother shir to explain that, like what leniencies we're exactly talking about. But one of the reasons that the Rabbanut does this is because they're not just worried about you, the individual customer. You, the individual, is going to be strict if you want to, and that's your priority. But they're worried about making as many restaurants and as many things as possible kosher, because they're caring not just about you, the individual, but about Klal Yisrael in general. Okay? So, because our time is particularly short, I don't think we're going to have so much time to get into the sources of actually showing the why the heter mechira is allowed. But so I want to focus more on your question, just to get practical. We'll maybe get into this tomorrow. So you're right. That's a very good point. That's exactly the question. Why Rav Kook was talking about a particularly generation where they were in dire straits. So there, it made a lot of sense to apply the heter mechira. But what about in our generation, when there seems to be other options, nechon? And that's why there are a lot of rabbis who exactly will say, okay, heter mechira back then, but nowadays we don't need it. But on the other hand, you should know that even today, the vast majority of farmers, if we did not allow a heter mechira, simply would just sin and would just work the land, and the many, many Israelis would simply choose to eat that fruit and produce. So the reality on the ground still is that many, many Jews would sin if we did not allow this heter mechira. That's thing number one. Thing number two is that you have to recognize the bigger economical things that on the ground beyond just... It could be that we wouldn't starve if we didn't rely upon the heter mechira, but the driver who drives there and all the businesses involved in the business, if all of Israel would only be dependent on external / Arab produce, it would have a devastating effect on the general Israeli economy.
I also wanted to ask about what's remaining, but we don't have a lot
of time. Okay, right. So just this is a prelude, exactly. But your question is great, and that's why many religious Zionist rabbis will, thank God, very much encourage these other new solutions which have been brought to the ground, which are considered more ideal halachically. Okay? For example, Otsar Beitin is considered the ideal, right? And we even have at Yeshivat HaKotel every Wednesday night, they sell Otsar Beitin foods, or you can go to the Shuk and go to Otsar Beitin stores. And there's something called Matzah Menutak, which is basically you buy it from Gush Katif lands, and it's hydroponically grown fruits, and that most rabbis...
Upside down.
it was originally from Gaza. Now it's not necessarily from Gaza, but originally it was from Gaza, where they developed these hydroponics.
Oh, okay.
But in any case, that also is a leniency which is more accepted by everyone, and we don't have to rely upon...
It's not even on the ground, so everyone will...
Almost everyone. There are still some rabbis that say, no, it's still considered planting, even if you're not coming from the ground, but the vast majority of rabbis are lenient about that, although it has sand in it.
I love that we find sand in the
loopholes. Yeah, we love it. That's what Judaism is. Awesome.
I was on a program, and we went to like all those places in the UW Shabbat. We went to wineries, and at the, like certain wineries, they actually kept two times. They didn't work at all, and they just... Let the land be.
Awesome. That certainly is the idea. That certainly is the idea, but we have to always also take into account what's best for Amichan. All right, we'll stop here because you guys got to go to Shir in 5 minutes, and I want to give you time to chill. It's not the Shem. So tomorrow, I think, we'll continue.